bit hotter.
Yeah, how'd you stay warm up there, Dick?
Yeah,
how did you stay warm up there at high altitude?
Well, it was pretty warm in India, so a lot of times we took off in shorts and ended up in heavier garments until we got over there. And then you could start letting down in China, Kunming, China, where the American volunteer group was. That was our terminal. It was about like Denver, Colorado, about 5,000 feet. So that part was fine.
Right. How long did you spend on that particular assignment in India? How long were you there?
I was there 14 months.
And how often would you fly to China and back?
I believe it would be about 3 times a week.
My gosh. So how many planes were lost? Was there a high attrition rate of those C-47s?
I think I read somewhere that there's pretty close to 500 airplanes that are dispersed from India to China.
Right. Yeah. So you finally, after those 14 months, went back to the States for a few months.
Yeah.
And then what was your next assignment?
Well, they were looking for people that were familiar with that area, and my roommate and I were contacted, and we both decided that we wanted to go ahead with it. And so we became members of what they call Project 9. And later on, it ended up with the First Air Commando Group.
So you went right back to Burma.
Yeah. This time we were stationed in India, at a grass field, and the object of the First Air Commando Group was to insert the friendly troops into Burma as far as possible, that they could be air supplied and go on and penetrate Burma and make it better off for Mara's Marauders. Yeah.
Mike?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever thought that you'd have an opportunity to sit and ask questions of Dick Cole?
I'm just sitting here in awe and wondering what's going on. You know, I'm kind of trying to put myself in the present moment, but something just occurred to me a couple of minutes ago. This man and I may have flown some of the same aircraft. We used the same C-47s out of World War II for the gunships, and I just wonder if we have that in common, that we flew the same airplane. I tell you, it would be amazing for me to know that. I had one question for Colonel Cole. As a long-suffering co-pilot in the Air Force and in airlines, I had a lot of understudy time. I always was interested in what the captain, Colonel Doolittle, had to say as soon as you knew you were clear of the deck and flying, the airplane was flying. What were his words to you when he realized you were in the air and everything was good?
Yeah. Well, in the cockpit, Colonel Doolittle was not a chit-chat man. I'll have to go back. Some of you may remember that at the time, second lieutenants were to be seen and not heard. So I didn't want to start a one-way conversation. So there was nothing said.
Nothing said, okay. For history.
There's the answer to that one.
Yeah.
That's great.
The co-pilot briefing, sit down, shut up, and keep your feet off the seats. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that's great.
So
thank
Mike
you.
Spent 4.5 years active duty. 8 months flying this airplane that you see here as Spooky. He left active duty in 1970, spent 32 years with Delta.
Yes, sir.
So, Mike, Spookies. What's a Spooky?
Spooky is the result of a test they did as a young man. He was a lowly captain in the Air Force, and he was working out of Wright-Patterson, where they do all the fancy studying and stuff. And they sent Captain Terry to Vietnam to see what was really needed in air support. And his survey found out that the Viet Cong and the NVA had figured out a way to attack at night and do a lot of damage and without much resistance, except from the guys inside the place that were being attacked. They had a moonlight mission with C-47s where they'd fly around and drop flares to illuminate to help the guys be able to shoot the enemy. But once the flares went out, the guys knew that they were okay, and so they started attacking again. Well, Captain Terry came back and said, we need an airplane that can loiter all night over these outposts and respond immediately if they are attacked. So he got permission to get an old C-47 and down at Hurlburt Field, I believe is where they developed it. I don't remember. But they went down there and they put three miniguns in the thing. I believe they started out that way. But anyway, they wound up putting three miniguns. And the way these guns are mounted, they're on pods about this big around, and they're fixed mounted to the floor, and they're bore sighted to that little round pipper sight you see in the pilot's left window. That thing, when you look through it, it looks like a couple of parentheses and a dot or period in the middle, and it lit up at night, and you could see the target very well through that.
So who actually fired the guns?
Well, let me say that the whole mission was a total crew effort, David. We had seven crew members on this airplane. We had the aircraft commander, and I'll circle back to his role, the co-pilot, because the aircraft commander was flying this airplane and looking through the sight at the same time, because that's how we aim the guns. I'll just give it now. The AC fired the guns. The co-pilot's job was to keep us out of the dirt, basically. And if we exceeded our bank angle or if we started climbing, descending, if our speed was off, it was critical that we keep constant speed, constant altitude, and constant bank. Well, I gave him permission to nudge the yoke if he needed to, or say something to me if I was getting out of line. Now, we also had a flight engineer, and he was also a flight mechanic. Most of those guys were mechanics. And he would monitor the systems on the airplane so we could worry about keeping out of the dirt and doing our job. We had a navigator. The engineer was an enlisted man. The navigator was an officer. And the poor guy, can you see the window just behind the pilot's window up there? It's about this big and about that long. That navigator had a responsibility of verifying and the target for me to make sure that I didn't shoot the wrong place, and it was critical. And that's what he had to look out of. I think about it now, and I don't know how he did it. But that's how he verify the target for me, just by, and I'll tell you more about how we lit the target. It was all pretty crude stuff. We carried two gunners, and what the gunners did, they were specialists in handling these miniguns. They kept them operating, if they overheated, they would warn me that they had to take the gun off the line, and they cleared them, and they loaded them. We carried 21,000 rounds per flight. It's about all the weight we could carry. And I think the number was 48 flares. The other crew member was the loadmaster. And, excuse me, the loadmaster would arm parachute flares. They were 2 million candle power phosphorus flares. I mean, they were bright. They'd light up the whole area for 5 minute drift down probably. And he'd throw them out, and they'd float down on a parachute.
What altitude did you usually fly?
3,000 above the ground was our altitude. We were down in the dirt with them a little bit. But that's how the crew operated. Now, as far as firing the guns, the aircraft commander did, acquire the target and fire the guns. And we could select one, two, or three of the guns at a time. We could do slow rate or fast rate. Slow rate was 3,000 rounds a minute. Fast rate was 6,000 rounds a minute. So let's say we had a target that was really needing saturated real fast. I could call for three guns at fast rate and just put out 18,000 rounds a minute. And that will cover, the advertisement is that'll cover every square foot of a football field.